potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Honest Thief in theaters, The Trial of the Chicago 7 on Netflix, Evil Eye and Nocturne on Amazon Prime, and Hubie Halloween, which actually came out last week on Netflix, but I'm going to talk about it this week. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Digimon Adventure, Last Evolution, Kazuna, whatever the heck that means. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news actually comes as a suggestion from a listener, Chris from Tarpon Springs in Florida. Chris is visually impaired. He's legally blind. And we've corresponded in the past, and one of the things he talked a lot about was video description in movies. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, especially if you grow up not blind and then you lose your sight over years, you remember what it was like watching movies, and you still have the memories of what you saw when you're younger, but you can still experience a piece of filmed entertainment. I mean, the visual element of movies is only a portion of it, because you've got sound and you've got music and you've got acting and all that comes across. And one of the things that is available on DVD and Blu-ray, which is one of the wonderful advents of digital technology, and it's been available for decades, but most sighted people don't realize it because they never go look for this in the soundtrack of a DVD or Blu-ray. But what they have are these things that are visual descriptions, where the movie will have a narrator pop in periodically at specifically timed moments to say so-and-so walks across the room, so-and-so takes out a gun and points it at this person, you know, so-and-so turns into a dinosaur. So you know what's going on screen. It basically, a good audio description describes what's happening on screen that's critical to understanding what's going on. It's the visually impaired counterpart to captions for the hearing impaired. And Chris emailed me and let me know that there's this interesting website that you could go to if you happen to be out there in radio land. And of course, radio is a big resource of entertainment and information for people who do not have sight, or they have, even if it's just visually impaired, because radio is a theater of the mind, and radio is all about the audio experience. And he thought he'd ask me to give a little shout out to this website, and it's called audiovault.net. And what they do is they set up MP3 files of video description of a bunch of different movies. And they have, you know, hundreds of movies in their catalog, TV shows in their catalog. It's run by this small group of people, not done for profit. It runs completely on donations, and it's there to allow those with visual impairments to take part in cinema and television. And I think that's fantastic. And they have stuff going all the way back to, he mentions, like, they go back to, like, the original Dracula, the Todd Browning Dracula, and more recent stuff, like even like Bill and Ted Face the Music, he said, is on there. And it really helps blind people. Now, it's funny, as I went to the website, I looked at it and I go, I thought it didn't load properly, because it's just, it looks like a website that was made in like 1994. It's just text on a screen. And then I kind of hit myself in the head and I say, dummy, they don't need a visual element. They don't need flash animation for a website that's catering to the blind people market. But it's incredibly bare bones, but it does offer a great resource to people who are blind and people who are visually impaired. Again, it's audiovault.net. If you or a loved one is blind or visually impaired, check it out. It opens up a whole new world of cinema that you may not have had access to until now. The next piece of news is actual news happening in the industry, and it revolves around Disney. They came out with an announcement this past week or so that Disney is doing a shuffling around in its organization. And they are focusing on streaming primarily, and in particular, Disney Plus. Now, they don't give a whole lot of detail about this. There's a lot of blanks that you can fill in on your own, and I'm sure things are going to come out throughout the next several months. But what this tells me is they said, hey, we're not waiting for theaters to get back up and running 100%. We are going to find our own path. And they played around with this earlier this year by putting stuff on Disney Plus and putting in Mulan. And I think what this tells me is they said, well, we like what we saw with Mulan, but we're going to need to tweak that. And my belief is $30 was a lot to charge. What they should do is they should offer people a buy-in for like $30. But if you're already a Disney Plus subscriber, give it to you for like 15. I think they would have sold more copies of it. I think they would have gotten more downloads. I think they would have had the movie seen more widely, and it would have probably put some more money in their pocket. I think the other thing you're going to see happen, and I was talking about this a year ago when Disney Plus came out, I said at some point you're going to start seeing them diversify their service, because right now pretty much Disney Plus is a family-friendly environment. There's some 20th Century Fox items on the menu, but it's stuff like Miracle on 34th Street or Home Alone, the X-Men movies, the stuff that kids can watch and aren't going to get in trouble for watching. But there is a huge catalog of stuff. I mean, Disney has its own. I mean, all the Touchstone movies that are rated R, stuff like Ruthless People from the 90s or something like that. The stuff that does not need to be PG or PG-13. You know, Pretty Woman's another great example of that. In addition to all of the 20th Century Fox stuff, I mean, stuff like Die Hard and the Alien movies and the Predator movies, all these things have yet to find a way to capitalize on them in a streaming market. And I think what you're going to end up seeing is Disney Plus parents, and that's where you're going to have R-rated content. You maybe have to pay an extra couple bucks a month for that. But I also think what you're going to see is them pivot all their stuff to streaming, say, hey, we're not going to wait for theaters to get back to full range, and maybe at some point we'll put stuff in there. Sure, we still got Black Widow on the slate, but we're looking to deliver stuff with premium video on demand services to our viewers, and Disney's taking the first step, and Disney's not above being a pioneer in this sort of thing. This goes back to the whole thing that it's very worrisome for theaters, but not necessarily worrisome for the consuming of the content. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Monster Hunter, which comes out in theaters on December 30th.
Do you have any idea what those markers are?
They look pretty ancient.
The tracks end here.
Definitely Bravo team.
They don't just disappear.
Did you see that thing?
Come on!
Fall back!
This is officially above my pay grade.
I don't care what those creatures are. We destroy them and close the gateway.
Yes, ma'am.
This stars Mila Jovovich as a video game action hero who gets transported to another dimension and has to fight giant monsters. It looks like it's basically Pacific Rim without giant robots in the sand. It's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who I used to love his stuff, but his stuff has gotten to be such crap over the years. But this one might be an okay January release. It's a New Year's release. I don't know if it's still going to go to the theater. They may pivot it, or it might be a video on demand 2 weeks later, for all I know. But it looks like it might be fun on the big screen if I feel comfortable going to theaters in December. The next one is The Addams Family 2, which comes out in theaters next Halloween on October 8th.
We're back!
Yes, we are, buddy.
Hey, where you going? I thought we were going fishing!
A sequel. How original.
I actually thought the animated version of The Addams Family was cute as heck. I enjoyed it. I had fun watching it. My family watched it. We enjoyed it. It was a cute movie. It was in the spirit of the original TV series, and I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I love the fact that they're going to do a sequel. We get no sense of what the movie's going to be or what the subject is or the plot, but, you know, it's obviously going to be the Addams Family. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Welcome to Blumhouse movies for this week. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews and look at the stuff that's on Amazon Prime this week. It's part of the Welcome to the Blumhouse series. They dropped two movies onto Amazon Prime last week. They got two new movies this week. The first one I want to talk about is Evil Eye. An Indian mother worries that her daughter's new boyfriend is the reincarnation of a man from a past abusive relationship.
Emma, I've met someone.
This is such good news.
I've been praying for a good man for you.
Can you give me his date of birth?
You're not checking our horoscopes.
Are you wearing a bracelet?
Yes.
Good. It will protect you, darling.
If you're not careful, bad things could happen.
Is your mom happy?
I thought she was.
I don't want you to fall in love with the wrong man.
Your mother was in a very bad relationship.
How bad?
He was dangerous. He never really recovered.
I don't think he ever went away.
One of the things that I did notice with these Welcome to the Blumhouse movies is they do tend to try to be multicultural to a degree, and that's important. And I'm not even making a political statement, but when you have a population like you do in America, with the large immigrant population, especially Indians, and Indians love movies. The Indians as a culture just love movies. And because you're in America, it shouldn't stop you from enjoying movies. And so this movie it's not catered to an Indian audience. It doesn't even feel like it's an authentically Indian movie. It's an American movie, but it's got an Indian family as the backdrop. And the one I talked about last week, Black Box, had African Americans in it. And the one I talked about last week, The Lie, that's not multicultural. And Nocturne isn't particularly multicultural. But I find it interesting that they're playing with, you know, culture and representation in these movies, which is important, and that's a smart move from a business decision because, you know, that means you're widening your audience. Now, in this movie, it stars Sunita Mani, I think is how you say her name. She was in that movie Save Yourselves a couple weeks ago. And you might recognize her. She's in this ad for Progressive or Geico. It's the guy who spins a sign and the dorky redhead kid who spins a sign. It's his living girlfriend. He like asks, "Are this making my arms bigger?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she's just basically the bored girlfriend or housewife or something like that. But she's in the movie and she plays the lead character. And this is the second movie in the last couple weeks I've seen her in. So she's kind of like a new face, a fresh face to me. And I think she's actually a pretty good actress. She very much plays against type compared to like Save Yourselves, where she was kind of this adorable but very plain character. And this one, she's, you know, a modern professional woman. She looks very attractive and she dresses nicely and everything. But she's met a guy, and the whole thing is her mother has been bugging her for ages to get married and wanting to arrange a marriage. And that shows up a lot. Look, that's again, that's Indian culture. I got a friend who's Indian, and he's in an arranged marriage. And, you know, that's just the way the culture works there. And it's not like, you know, they don't just randomly pick two people and force them to marry. That's not how it works. If you actually look at it, there's a betrothal process and a selection process, and you kind of just pick this matchmaking service, but it's just your family's a little more involved, which horrifies most Americans. But that's kind of how it works in some Indian families. But Evil Eye, honestly, it's an okay story. It's sort of like when I talked about The Lie last week, which is the one about the girl who said she pushed her friend into the river. That one's less of a horror movie, which is more about parents trying to protect their daughter from a crime. And it takes a while to get to the horror elements of Evil Eye. And otherwise, it's just a relatively standard family drama of this Indian woman or this Indian American woman who is living in America and kind of lives by that culture and is frustrated with her mother trying to fix her up all the time and pressuring her to get married. And that's sort of the worth of a woman in the mother's eye. So it deals with that very common stuff that you see in movies dealing with, you know, old world cultures or immigrant cultures where they're dealing with this is the way it is in America and back home in the old world. I'm not going to follow those rules. So it just basically becomes that where it's a relationship thing, but then they kind of add this thing where she thinks it's just a reincarnation, and it's predictable. It doesn't have a whole lot of surprises to it, but it plays the game well. It pushes the right button. It's got a beat and you can dance to it. So I'm going to have to say that Evil Eye kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Nocturne. Twin sisters vie for attention at a prestigious musical academy.
What makes Vivian the star?
Jules will always be there for you.
And you, whatever you are.
What if I could be more? What if I could be great? All I need is a chance to prove myself.
I stole Nora's theory book.
She carved symbols all over the wall and threw herself out a third floor window.
She was brilliant. Nora's theory book. I've been reading it, studying it. Sure, it's like it's taking control.
Unlike Evil Eye, Nocturne jumps into the horror stuff a little bit earlier. It certainly teases it in the first scene where this musical prodigy has carved weird symbols into the wall and leaps off the building and kills herself. And in a way, the insanity she had is contagious. And this one girl steals or finds the suicide girl's notebook, and she's drawn into the artistry of that she's drawn pictures and stuff like that into the notebook. And that helps her in her competition with her sister. Because her sister is one of those it's not even that the sister is more talented, is the sister's less restrained. The main character is talented and has a lot of musical ability, but she's sort of held back by her own self-consciousness and her own worry and her own self-critical nature that she doesn't let herself free up enough to be the musician that she wants to be. And if she could do that, like her sister's able to, she would exceed her sister. But right now, her sister is surpassing her. And so there's the sibling rivalry going on. You know, the movie itself, kind of like Evil Eye, at sometimes it does turn into just this nasty, aggravated fight between the two sisters. But then there's times where it's really going into, you know, dream logic world where it becomes surreal for this girl and some of the things she's doing and being influenced by whatever is a spirit or whatever that's haunting this book. It has some great elements to it. I will say that it has some really interesting elements and, you know, taken as like a piece by piece, like scene by scene. Some of the scenes are really good, but man, as a whole, it does not come together at all. And that's a shame because it's a really neat idea. I mean, it does sort of reveal the pretentious nature of like a music academy. And look, here's the thing. I went to school and one of my roommates was a composition major getting his master's thesis. We're good friends, still friends today. But I had my fair share of exposure to high-level musical students. And some of them can be really pretentious and egotistical. And this absolutely captures that. That's sort of that, well, it must be the suffering you have to go through. And you do tend to roll your eyes at this, but it's realistic. I mean, it's a realistic portrayal of the self-importance of the best of the best performance and why certain people have earned the right to pontificate about things. That's accurate, but ultimately the movie, even though it has these great elements to it, it never gels. It's like an ambrosia salad that you didn't let chill long enough in the fridge and it just kind of falls apart into fruit cocktail in this mush. So I'm going to have to say that Nocturne kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Honest Thief and Hubie Halloween. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with the one that's in the theaters, and that is Honest Thief. Liam Neeson stars as a bank robber who tries to come clean for the woman he loves, but runs up against dirty cops who want to try to steal the money.
I've robbed 12 banks in 7 states. I have a little over $9 million in cash.
Federal Bureau of Investigation.
I want to turn myself in.
We can take this money for ourselves.
Let's do it.
Whoa, I'm turning myself in. If those two crooked cops are willing to kill another agent, what are they capable of doing to you and me? Agent Evans, I'm coming for you.
The coronavirus has done a lot of things over the year. It's put a lot of things on hold. But one of the things it could not stop is Liam Neeson kicking butt and taking names. Every year, there's at least one or two of these Liam Neeson movies. What was the one last year? It was the one about the, he was a snowplow driver who was going after the Russian mob. It seems like every year he has a group of people he's got to go after. And I mean, the guy's in his 60s. What's so funny about it is, you know, you see stories of Chuck Norris and Sylvester Stallone and Schwarzenegger when they were doing their Expendable movies. And of course, when Schwarzenegger and Stallone were trying to make a comeback with Escape Plan, and everyone wrote about how, oh, look, these guys are like 65 years old and they're just still doing action movies. No one seems to care that Liam Neeson's like in his 60s. And that guy is great. I mean, I absolutely love a good Liam Neeson action movie. And he's done stuff that's good and bad. I mean, the Taken movies, for the most part, were pretty good. He did one on a plane. And he did one on a train. He's done them in automobiles. I mean, he's basically done the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles of violent revenge stories. This one, I wouldn't say it's not, certainly not the best. And it's clear that Neeson is aging. He's not able to do the in-person physical stunts. I mean, the beating the crap out of people, it seems to have been dialed back in this episode. He's usually driving a car into something or blowing somebody up with a bomb. But he still does this incredibly well. There's like even a scene, and I think I played in the trailer, where he says, "I'm coming to get you." You know, I mean, that's basically, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to find you and I'm going to get you. And now, the last one he did, that one about the snowplow driver, that one, because it was based on a Norwegian movie, of course, it had to work the plot together and sort of mirror the plot from the Norwegian film and make it, Americanize it to a degree. But it still was a very Norwegian movie. If you've seen enough Norwegian movies, you know what I mean when I'm saying that. There's a certain feel that Norwegian films have. This one, as I understand it, is just a straight up, you know, original story. So it's wholly American, and it's not trying to pay tribute to a previous film. It's just a straight up action movie about a guy who wants to clear his name. In a little ways, it reminds me of the movie Payback, the one with Mel Gibson, what, like about 25 years ago, something like that, where he needed like $70,000 from this crime family. And that's all he wanted. He just wanted, I want my $70,000 and I'll give you a million. He's like, I just want my $70,000. He just wanted to square up. And that's basically what's going on with Honest Thief. And we've all been in that situation. I mean, maybe, you know, you're not like trying to turn in $9 million to the FBI, but we've all been in that situation where like, I just need this one thing. You know, you go be this, I just need you to say, I'm sorry. I just need you to pay me back my $2. And somebody just digs their heels in and doesn't do it. And it just gets worse and ugly and hopefully not violent, but it, you know, it never ends well. And the other thing that's funny about this movie, of course, he's trying to turn himself in and they don't believe him because they get everybody constantly coming in saying, I'm this crazy bank robber. And they're like, yeah, haha, you're not. What's interesting is Kate Walsh is in this. She's best known for being in the TV series Private Practice, which was a spinoff of Grey's Anatomy. And she plays his would-be girlfriend, the one he falls in love with, the one that he wants to clear his name for. And it's great to see her in a movie before. She was never a big movie star. I mean, she showed up in a couple of them. But, you know, she was never a big movie star. But it's nice to see her get a part now that Private Practice is. I don't know if she's kind of circled back to Grey's Anatomy anymore. Who knows? A character might be dead. They kill off everybody on that show. But ultimately, this is exactly what you'd expect. He's kicking butt and taking names. And, you know, it's got a nice little supporting cast. Yeah, Jai Courtney's in it. I can forgive that. But you got Robert Patrick. And Jeffrey Donovan from Burn Notice actually shows up. It's not a Clint Eastwood movie, and Jeffrey Donovan shows up as the as one of the FBI agents. So it's a nice little familiar cast. It's a nice little small actioner that'll get you through the weekend. So I'm going to have to say, Honest Thief kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hubie Halloween. Adam Sandler stars as a socially awkward man trying to keep Halloween safe in Salem when a serial killer shows up.
Halloween's your partner.
Is he a good guy?
Hubie Dubois is the nicest guy in this town.
It's pretty impressive how long he's been a loser.
There's something off in this town.
Are you getting angry? Oh.
We got an unsolved mystery here.
Oh.
Hubie!
And yo, who did this?
Not now, Hubie.
I suggest we cancel Halloween immediately.
I have a love-hate relationship with Adam Sandler's movies. I truly believe he has made some of the worst movies of this century. Stuff like Jack and Jill, the Grown Ups films. But I respect him in a way, partly for his dramatic work, even if I may not like it. He's in a lot of stuff that I don't particularly care for. But I respect the fact that he does do dramatic acting, or even like Uncut Gems this last season. I wasn't a fan of the movie, but I thought he did a great performance. But some of his comedies, I think, are kind of funny. Especially going back to his original ones. I mean, you talk about like the Happy Gilmore and the Billy Madison movies. Those are funny films. There's just no two ways around it. They're funny movies. And the stuff that he does with Herlihy and Colbert, I mean, that stuff, even stuff that like he just produces mildly, stuff like Grandma's Boy can be a hoot. I talked about that a couple weeks ago. And then he got this deal with Netflix where he's like just making, it's, I think it started out, he's going to make six movies and he's well beyond six at this point. And he's producing some very popular stuff on Netflix. That movie, The Wrong Missy, that came out earlier this year. I don't know if he was in, but he produced. That was a big one. The one where he was with David Spade and the do-over, that was very popular. What was the one he did with Jennifer Aniston, The Murder Mystery? That was extremely popular. In some ways, I respect Adam Sandler for doing movies and just employing all of his friends. And a lot of times, he got to go take a trip to like the French Riviera or something like that. And honestly, I have to say his Netflix movies are okay because he's not trying so hard. That's part of the problem with like the Grown Ups movies and Jack and Jill is he just tries so hard to make them funny. And comedy is something that works best when it feels effortless. Now, there's a lot of trying hard in Hubie Halloween. Don't get me wrong. And there's problems with it. I mean, he does that voice that he does from the Water Boy. You know, that's the voice that he does. It's Hubie Halloween. That's the Adam Sandler voice. And pretty much watching an Adam Sandler movie is like going out on a date. It doesn't matter how good looking the person is. If they come up to you and be like, okay, let's go to the restaurant and get some food, huh? You're going to be like, this is going to be an awkward night of sex. So when it comes to the Adam Sandler films, when he throws that accent in or that weird voice, that's annoying. And there's other things in there. There's jokes that don't land and silliness. But for the most part, it's a harmless movie. It's also so steeped in Halloween imagery and decorations and props and ideas and characters and costumes that I have to love it on that level. I mean, it's like watching Hocus Pocus or Ernest Scared Stupid. These movies that are set in Halloween and they just feel so much like a Halloween movie. This absolutely does. And that makes up for the stupid voice and some of the jokes that don't quite land. And the plot sometimes has trouble staying on the rails. But overall, it's kind of a funny movie. I mean, in a way, it's an allegory for him making his own movies because he's out there being stupid and everybody's throwing eggs at him and making fun of him and ridiculing him. But he just keeps pushing forward. And the character of Hubie, doesn't matter how many people are making fun of him, throwing eggs at him or whatever, he just pushes forward and tries to be the protector of Halloween. And I feel that, I may be reading a little too much into it, but that's kind of, feels a certain level of subtext in the film. But ultimately, it's just a fun little movie, and you can watch it with the kids. I mean, it has some mildly dirty jokes in it, but like I said, Ernest Scared Stupid, Hocus Pocus, God help me, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the trial of the Chicago 7 and talk about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Digimon. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wind down the reviews with the final one. It actually has been in movie theaters for a couple weeks in very limited release. I think it was in, like, I live in Columbus, Ohio. There's an independent film theater down on the campus of the Ohio State University called The Gateway. And I think they've shown it in limited engagements over the last week or so. But it's available pretty much to everybody now on Netflix. And that is The Trial of the Chicago 7. Aaron Sorkin writes and directs this docudrama about peace activists put on trial for allegedly starting a riot at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. All world's
watching. Martin's dead. All world's watching. Bob is dead. All world's watching. Jesus is dead. All world's watching.
They tried it peacefully. We gonna try something else.
These rebels without a job.
They're a threat to national security.
This revolution, we may have to hurt somebody's feelings.
This is a very historic movie. It pulls from trial transcripts. It pulls from interviews with the people involved. And when you watch this movie, which is, it's a lot to digest. There's a lot of stuff going on because it's trying to show everything that happened at the convention, leading up to the convention, and then how things go on in this 6 months trial, the aftermath of it as well, as best they can. So there's a lot to put into what is essentially a 2-hour movie. It's got a phenomenal cast. You've got Sacha Baron Cohen as Abby Hoffman. You've got Mark Rylance as one of the defense attorneys. You've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt as one of the prosecutors. You've got Frank Langella as the judge overseeing the case. And you've got Michael Keaton as the former attorney general. I mean, it's a fantastic cast, as you would expect from an Aaron Sorkin movie. I mean, he definitely has a lot of pull. And I know Steven Spielberg was involved in putting this together, so obviously the influence of Spielberg brings everybody to the table. And the movie's, it's about the trial. It absolutely is. It focuses on the trial. But what it tries to do is it's not just a courtroom drama. It always leaps out of the courtroom and goes into the past as to what happened leading up to the convention and the events in Chicago that led them to be charged. And they have some outrageous stuff that happens. And when you watch the movie, you're like, that can't be real. And you know, doggone it, you go back and you look and you're like, holy cow, that actually happened. And some stuff that's ridiculous, like Abby Hoffman and his friend showing up in judge robes one day. The two other things that are going on that you just could not believe happened in an American courtroom. And it certainly portrays Judge Hoffman, who's played by Frank Langella, as the antagonist. And in a way, as much as what happened in the movie is real based on the court transcripts, It certainly puts him as the symbolic representation of the establishment just wanting to put down the people that are being anti-establishment, even if they're not necessarily doing anything illegal. And it's a great lesson in looking at just because you're in power and you don't like what somebody's doing does not mean you have the right or the ability or the authority to be able to stop that. Just because you don't like something does not mean that it's illegal. The other thing it does is it all comes down to this riot that had happened, and it shows some very relevant things. It shows how hard it is to actually pin down who started violence in a situation like this, and that's completely relevant to what's going on. I mean, with all the discussion of riots and protests and, you know, what's happening in some of these cities, everyone just wants to label all the protesters as rioters. It's when you really kind of dig deep into the accounts, firsthand accounts of stuff, you find that a lot of these things are isolated events and you can't necessarily say who caused each one. And the other thing is, if you put people who are peacefully protesting and then you throw a bunch of police officers in riot gear across from them, that might start the riot. And that shows that question of what really starts it. Where is the chicken? Where is the egg? And what's brilliant about the movie is it doesn't hold your nose. It's not like taking a dog and you're saying, look at this. Now look at this. This is the message I'm making. It presents it there and you kind of tie the threads together. Now the threads are pretty obvious, but it doesn't dumb it down. And the other thing is very relevant today. I mean, shockingly relevant to today. There are lines in this movie that I just kind of shook my head and I go, I cannot believe that was not restructured to fit what's been going on, either with protests or rules of the government or roles of people within government and what is legal and what they can and can't do. I actually had an opportunity to be in a Q&A with Aaron Sorkin, who directed and wrote this. And here's what he had to say about the relevancy of this movie to today's society.
We thought that the film was plenty relevant last winter when we were making it. We didn't need it to get more relevant, but obviously it did. The protests in Seattle, Minneapolis, Kenosha, Lexington, Washington, D.C., and seeing tear gas again and nightsticks. You know, we couldn't believe our eyes. It was chilling. It was shocking. I've been asked a few times in the last few weeks if I changed the script at all or changed the film at all to mirror events in the world today? And the answer is not a word, not a frame. Events in the world changed to mirror the script.
He's right. It's kind of disturbing when you watch some of this stuff going. There's like a scene where cops take their badges and name tags off. And I'm like, you know, you're watching that on social media, people having pictures of cops or people allegedly in authority with no badges or maybe with the badges covered in tape. So you can't get badge numbers or names. There's a lot of stuff that's still going on that's systemic to the system that I think this shows, because you can look back at it and say 50 years ago, gosh, that was horrible. And then you're like, oh, but some of this stuff's still going on. And look, I'm not pointing fingers here, but I'm just saying this movie, if it has no other effect, it can say, what are people going to say about things that are happening in 2020 when they look back at this from 2070? And I think that's important. Not to mention, it's a gripping movie. It's very well written. And in the fact, you know, like Sorkin has this habit of going overly punchy with his dialogue. And I know some people just love that. They just love that back and forth. I don't like it. I think it's sort of false. There's only really one scene where he does it. The rest of it, it's more subdued. It takes its time out of respect for what's actually happening in the courtroom and to make it at least seem realistic. So I got to say, Trial of Chicago 7 is a powerful, relevant, important movie to watch, and it absolutely totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Today's feature actually came out last week. I didn't have a chance to talk about it because I was talking about that Be the Beginning. And that is Digimon Adventure Last Evolution Kizuna, whatever that means. I am not an expert on Digimon, let me tell you. In this 20th anniversary of the Digimon franchise, the team tries to stop a mysterious force from putting all the Digimon destins into comas.
Too bad things can't stay the same forever. Friends sometimes grow apart.
Do you know why Digimon partners pick the children they work with? The power of your Digimon steadily turns. Bond between Digimon and partner is broken forever.
Does this mean we all have to say goodbye to our Digimon?
We all live with the choices we make! This is going to be our final Digivolution!
First of all, if you understood anything of that description or anything that happens in that trailer, then you're the person who's going to want to watch this movie. If that was absolute nonsense and gibberish to you, you probably don't need to get this film. Ultimately, this is just, it's another Digimon adventure. And Digimon's somewhat of a knockoff on Pokemon, whereas Pokemon was a card game. Digimon was a little, I think it was a digital game. That's what digital monsters is what Digimon stands for. But it has a kind of the same thing where a monster pairs with a kid and then the kid becomes its trainer and they're able to battle in arenas or whatever. And it's them trying to find this ultimate threat. The catch is that they're growing up. I mean, it's been 20 years. So they're near adulthood, they're in school or they have a job. And so it is as much of a coming of age movie as it is a losing of age movie. That type of movie where you realize you're no longer a kid. Sort of like how Bill and Ted Face the Music was as much a movie about just having fun as a movie about them realizing they weren't teenage kids anymore. And there's a certain sort of heartbreaking message in this movie. And in that sense, it's, I think, aimed for the crowd who like grew up playing Digimon. Like if you were playing Digimon when you were 5 to 10 years old and you're 25 now, you're the one who's going to want to watch this movie because it has that nostalgia factor to you. For somebody like me, I mean, it was entertaining and colorful and cute and fun, but it made no sense because I don't do Digimon. But still, I'm going to have to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Batman, Death in a Family, Space Ghost and Dino Boy, the complete series, The Last Starfighter on Blu-ray, and The Flintstones, the complete series. And that is it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about On the Rocks, Bad Hair, Borat 2, and Synchronic. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.